We searched far and wide, sifting through the most read and emailed stories from the Panhandle to the Bering Strait, and we sicked our producer Ilya on his Midwest beat, and he came up with something good. It only means one thing. It's time to bring you another round of the Bryant Park Express. What is the name of the show?
I think we're calling it the Bryant Park Project.
Thank you. And this is called The Most.
Can we have Jay-Z for the most music? I was feeling that. Okay, the most music is very good, too. First up on the most, we've got Dan Pashman. Something from the New York Times.
That's right, guys. How you doing? New York Times, interesting article here about the history of the Manhattan Project. Of course, the development of the nuclear bomb, which we all sort of think of, I do at least think of something that happened out in New Mexico at Los Alamos.
Uh-huh.
It was always called the Manhattan Project. A lot of people may wonder, why was it called the Manhattan Project? Well, it turns out it actually started out here in Manhattan. And the development of the atomic bomb in the U.S. has major roots here in Manhattan. This is all comes from a book called The Manhattan Project by Robert S. Norris, a historian.
Do you get a dollar every time you say Manhattan?
I know. Let's get a bell. Ring that bell every time he says Manhattan.
All right. So it's kind of interesting to think that this thing was developed in Manhattan without anyone knowing what was going on.
I'm sorry, I'm just distracting
you. Major amounts of uranium were stored here on this island where we're sitting right now. And we actually have a piece of sound from the New York Times web video. Let's take a listen to that.
A steady source of uranium was critical to the project's success. When people visit the famous Wall Street Bull, they're just steps from 25 Broadway, the former offices of Edgar Sangier, a Belgian who provided two-thirds of the uranium the Manhattan Project used. He ran an import-export company and stored hundreds of tons of uranium on Staten Island.
They always store the uranium on Staten Island.
I know, it always. It's because, you know, you think of, like, a place like New Mexico, clearly people live there, but it seems like, in your mind, this open, deserty area where, hey, you spill a little uranium here and there, who knows, Manhattan, ding! It's like, everybody's here, it's just amazing to think of them working with this stuff in any degree in a place as populous as. Populated.
And a lot of the buildings still stand today, and there are other purposes now, but to the same buildings around Manhattan.
Ding. Thank you, Dan.
MJ, you have a holiday.
Ooh, yes, I have a Halloween story.
Was that your...
That was my scary sound.
Terrifying.
This is from the Florida Sun Sentinel in Fort Lauderdale. There was an Associated Press poll that said that 34% of people share a belief in visitors from beyond the grave. And so the Florida Sun Sentinel folks decided to do some research into their own haunted history. And my favorite, there are tons of quotes of ghost stories in here, but my favorite is from Steve Galt, who's a Fort Lauderdale firefighter, who said that he has had his own encounter at the old West Side Station in 2002. And he's quoted as saying, "I fell asleep in the bunk room while studying for a test. I was out of it when I felt someone pulling off the covers and dragging them away. I thought it was a prank, so I looked under the bed, but there was no one there."
Very sad. Scared.
That's good. That's what you want, a deluded firefighter.
Right. As long as he knows where the hose is, I'm good with it. Ilya, you have been on the Midwest beat.
Oh, I'm not letting go of the Upper Midwest. This is my baby. This is like the Midwest Park Project for me. This is the story of an attempted burglar, Benjamin C. Hoppy, 18, out in Wisconsin. The story's in the Journal Sentinel. It's one of their most viewed. He invaded the home of a self-described old fat bartender, Michael Rieger, who had returned home not that long before from his bartending job. Rieger managed to get Hoppy into some kind of headlock. Hoppy escaped, but he left his pants. He could not escape with his pants. And police actually used his cell phone, which was in his pants, to track him down. They found him less than 2 hours later in a wooded area. According to reports, Hoppy was lying face down in tall grass with the hood of his sweatshirt pulled over his head. He repeatedly asked police, "How long were you guys looking for me? Because I was in a really good hiding spot." And as far as I'm concerned, West Bend, Wisconsin probably is a really great hiding spot. That's where I'm going to hide out.
He was like a little kid who, when you play hide and go seek and you find a super awesome place that's so good that your like little sister or brother can't find you, then you just get mad and come out of the closet.
Hey, I want to go play hide and seek right now.
All right.
I'll find you.
Wait, no, we got Rachel Martin.
Hello.
In the news booth.
So I have the most emailed story on the New York Times website, and this story tells the end of an era. Today in San Francisco, the Castro Street Party is no more. This is an annual Halloween party It is totally fun. Everyone gets dressed up. A lot of drag. Castro is the main gay neighborhood of San Francisco, for those who don't know. And recently there's been a lot of crime. People have said, you know, it's noisy, we're cracking down, you're not gonna get this party anymore. So people are upset. I'm sure some people are not so upset because it was kind of a loud party. But the subtext of this article is really interesting. It's about how gay neighborhoods are perhaps becoming a little more diffuse. People are moving out of areas like the Castro that are just too expensive now. And
the breeders
are they
moving
worth
in?
Saving?
Yes.
Yeah, the families, the breeders, people with kids, heterosexual couples are moving in. And so there's this whole debate about, are these places worth saving? Are things like the Castro Street Parade
the demise of the gayborhood?
I know, exactly. So check it out. It's a really good, it's a good article.
They're still going to have a big throwdown in West Hollywood, L.A. tonight, which is...
Oh, my neighborhood, the barricades have been up for 3 days.
Chelsea.
I'm ready.
Also, apparently, Kansas City apparently has a new thriving gay community. This is where they're all moving. Rents are cheaper, so who knows? Maybe a big party tonight in Kansas City.
Rock on, Kansas City.
Okay, we got 10 seconds left. Are we going to have to... Can we get
Trish
McKinney in? All right, go for it.
Hey there, guys. I have one of the most emailed stories off MSNBC.com. It's about a city in Brazil called Goiânia. It's approved women-only buses in an effort to curb rush hour groping on crowded buses. Here's a little quote from the sponsor of a bill. The beautiful women of Goiânia are constantly being sexually harassed on our overcrowded buses by men who seem unable to control themselves. So in this Brazilian city, they're adding women-only buses at rush hour, and apparently Rio has also done something similar on the subway system.
Good idea.
You start to get a little look into why that might be a slightly misogynistic culture when you hear the quote, they're just so beautiful.
And we can't help ourselves.
We can't help ourselves.
Yeah, it's a little, doesn't sound fun to me. I don't know.
All right, that wraps up the most for this Halloween, October 31st. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. You can find these and other stories at our website, npr.org/Bryant Park.